From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program on topics related to health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle in general. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Today, we bring a rebroadcast show to you as we are wading through the expansion here at KPCW. Sometimes things get a little noisy. So today, in the midst of concrete cutting, we bring you this episode aired in April. We hope you enjoy it. First, we speak with Daniel Stillman. He's the author of Good Talk, How to Design Conversations That Matter. He's an expert on the art of meaningful dialogue. He'll teach us how to see the structure of conversations. He says life is built one messy, slippery conversation at a time. And while conversations feel hard to hold on to, ebbing and flowing back and forth into eventual silence, they each have a structure. The first step to changing your conversation is to see what's going on between the silence. Daniel Stillman is also a podcaster. His podcast is called The Conversation Factory. On the show, he investigates how leaders create change through changing conversation. Since Pete and I interviewed Daniel back in April, I've been using a lot of the techniques with my own family around the dinner table during this time of COVID-19, and it has really produced some interesting conversation. We look forward to hearing from Daniel Stillman again. Then, let's face it, we want to stay informed on COVID-19, but our constant media exposure can be, well, downright stressful. It's an emotion we're trying to control and mitigate at this point. So how do we judge which media we should listen to? How often and how should we digest it? Our guest is Tracy Thomas. We spoke with her in April. She's a psychologist and emotional scientist based in California. We look forward to rebroadcasting that interview. Stay with us. This is The Mountain Life. We'll be back after. Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Our next guest is Daniel Stillman. He's a corporate facilitator for companies like Google and Visa. He's a keynote speaker and podcaster and has written a handbook of sorts. It's a step-by-step framework to affect change in your personal and professional conversations. He'll tell us how to navigate the conversations that matter. His new book is called Good Talk, How to Design Conversations That Matter. Daniel Stillman, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is super exciting to talk with you, Lynn.
Well, it's interesting because what we do here on The Mountain Life is we have conversations, and hopefully we have achieved that place that you get to where the conversation really does matter. So I guess you'll know at the end of this interview whether or not that's where we've gotten there.
and just to go meta, like, I know that you and Pete are designing this conversation behind the scenes, right? Like, you don't just go in blind to a dialogue. You come with a plan, right? You come with your props. Set it up.
We need more props, Daniel. We need more props, always.
Yeah, our props today are sort of face masks and rubber gloves, but you're right. The props, and we think about, we all go about the art of conversation in a variety of ways. Some of us, have to write down our questions and to create this framework that's very structured. The others of us sort of, do some reading and get a feel for the types of things that our curiosity wants to drive from the conversation. How do you approach a conversation, say, in a personal setting, like those that we've probably been involved in a lot more in the last 2 months?
Yeah, well, I mean, so first of all, I think it's an important question because conversations are how we build our entire lives, right? And for me personally, I think just starting with the fact that I have choices, right, that this is a design problem. If it doesn't go the way that I quote unquote want to do it, it's a question of whether or not I've planned appropriately or thought it through. And so everybody's got, there's a million frameworks, but at the very, very least, just thinking about who the other people are in the conversation and what they want and need is a good place to start, right? That's the absolute basics, is who else is involved and what do they want? What are their goals? What are their needs? And I would think like the third absolute must have is what I would put like super core to any conversation is what's the invitation that kicks things off, right? Can we talk, as we joke, like the text message, like we need to talk, that doesn't really start off a conversation well. So I always like to think about what's the whole arc of the conversation, what's the open, the explore, and the close, and can I communicate as much of that as possible to somebody, like that whole arc, in such a way as they go, okay, yeah, cool, I'd like to come along with you on that ride. I think that's just orienting people to the space that you want to take them through. It honestly just creates safety and clarity.
So it's interesting, the conversation design, and you, if we talk about design thinking, we start with, you know, what the end goal is, and how often do we enter into conversations where we don't really have an end goal, and is that okay, or should I always go into a conversation thinking, you know, here's something that I want to get out of this conversation?
Well, so like it's a push and a pull, excuse me, and I think of it as like a potter's wheel. I don't know if you've ever watched the movie Ghost, that amazing scene with Patrick Swayze, right? You know, just you go back there, right? And maybe you haven't been on a potter's wheel ever, but there's those two hands. There's the inner hand that opens up the pot, right? And if you only have the inner hand, you wind up with a plate instead of a pot, right? The thing literally won't hold water. And if you only have the outer hand, the thing collapses into a ball and you don't have anything at all. And so you really do need those two hands. So we go back to the opening and closing hands, right? There's that inner hand and that outer hand. There's control and opening. And I think of conversations the exact same way. It is totally cool and fun to go into a conversation where you're like, hey, let's see what comes up. That's improv. And that's honestly most of our lives, totally improvisational. But with business conversations, with quote unquote difficult conversations or important conversations, it's also good to have that outer hand and say, this is what I do want to talk about and this is what I don't want to talk about. And having that balance between those two is really, really important. Also, like if I can just say, understanding the material is important. So making a pot with clay versus making a pot with glass is totally different. And conversations have features. Right, it's a substance. I want people to actually see it as a substance that they can shape. And that's one of the challenges I find people have with online conversations, is that the substance is a little mushier, a little stickier. If you've ever, I was running a workshop yesterday, and sometimes in real person workshops we do like energizers and warm-ups, we play like rock paper scissors tournaments. If you ever try to do anything simultaneously with somebody with 15 people on a Zoom call, everybody winds up like slowing down. If you try to do rock paper scissors shoot with somebody on a video call, it's like, it's weird because you can't sync up with them. And we know that feeling of being on these online calls where it's like it's just harder to sync up. And so the substance that we're working with is different. And so I think we just have to work a little bit more slowly, a little bit more intentionally, a little bit more carefully when we go online. I feel like maybe I answered your question a little bit, Lynn.
Yeah, it was great.
It immediately brought me to the recent Saturday Night Live skits where they're really kind of making fun of the Zoom calls interactions.
Yeah.
And you brought this this kind of relaxed versus formal We try to, when we have in-person meetings, they tend to be more formal in a business setting. Now that we're interacting digitally, there's this integration, there's this fusion of I'm in my house and all of a sudden my husband or wife is in their towel behind me, and someone realizes I don't have pants on or whatever that we're fusing the personal and the professional and creating these really awkward moments. Always in my life. But what's the positives? What's the negatives there? And what do you advise based on your knowledge and expertise in the book?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Pete. And first, just to like level set on what you're talking about, when we're thinking about the components that make up a good conversation, the place that it happens is of huge importance, right? Having a board meeting at the beach seems like really cool and fun until like the papers start flying everywhere, right? And, you know, having a whiteboard, having the ability to like have a shared place for our conversation is really important. And it's the same thing when we're talking about online conversations. Like right now, the interface for our dialogue is just this phone line. So we don't have the visual feedback of facial expressions, but it also means that I can relax a little bit. You know, voice calls are lower bandwidth, literally lower bandwidth. You know, we could have this conversation over text, and then I could like really think through everything that I was going to say before I say it. And so really just deciding if a video call is what you need to have at all. Like, is it the right container for the conversation you need to have? Maybe it should be on Slack. Maybe it should be over email, maybe, possibly. Can the conversation be had asynchronously? And if we're going to do it on a video call, can we all be focused on the challenge for the time that we have? I know some people who are trying to take what they used to do in person and do it directly online. And honestly, it's insane. We just can't expect people to get a whole day, like 9 to 5, on a video call. You literally, your eyes burn to a crisp, right? People like have kids at home, right? People need bathroom breaks. And we used to say like 90 minutes was like the limit for in-person before people would need like a bio break. And that's still true. Like, I see people trying to run stuff that's multiple hours without giving people ample breaks. Of course, you're not going to get people to focus. But yeah, totally. You need to have a place in your house where you've got a background that is pleasing to look at. Honestly, people are doing these fake Zoom backgrounds. I've heard from at least one person that they make her physically ill. Oh, yeah. Like she gets like dizzy from working with them. They can be fun. They can be goofy. But I don't think they're super appropriate for business meetings. I've been on a couple of calls where somebody's got this beautiful sunset and then they move to the left 1 inch and I see their whole rumpled bed. I'm like, okay, like there isn't a place in your house that you can just tilt your laptop so that there's nothing behind you.
Right.
Right. I think that's kind of table stakes. I used to travel a lot for work, so I actually don't have a proper home office, but I have a little bookcase and I organized my books by color. So you can't see this right now, but it's very lovely. And my book is on the bookshelf behind me, like cover out. So it's like a subliminal messaging at all times that I have a book that people should get. And it just looks nice. There's some objects behind me. It's just being intentional about the space where you set up the conversation. Like when you think about hosting a party, do you put the drinks and the ice on opposite sides of the room? That's just cruelty. You know, you put the drinks and the ice and the bottle opener next to each other. That's what we in the design world called experience design, like just designing the experience. And you can design your half of the experience, the room you're in. You can't design necessarily the room everyone else is in, but you can say to everyone, like, hey, close your door.
Right. And what's unique about the typical, you know, work experience is that there's these water cooler conversations, there's these parking lot conversations, however you want to title those, that tend to be pretty influential in the regular business world. And those are obsolete. Those are not happening. And, I've experienced that, as well as, you know, not getting that real-time real person feedback, watching someone's body language. I mean, you get the head.
You're such a downer, Pete. You're not wrong. It's all true. What are we going to do about
help
it?
Help me.
Right?
Help me.
Well, I think it's a real challenge because when everything has to be structured, it's not as much fun, right? You're right. You can't just drop by somebody's desk. My fiance, who's down the hall having her own meetings and calls, like they are having lunch meetings, right? They have like bring a coworker day where they let their pets join them for lunch. You know, they're doing formal Fridays where we get dressed up nicer on Fridays and less nice. They're having happy hours. So sadly, you have to plan it. But I think that's the opportunity, is that we can be more intentional about the way that we do it.
Hmm. Planning what you wear, that seems like a thing of the past. This morning, Pete and I we're actually in the studio here at KPCW.
Wow, so
and it is really nice.
6 feet apart, I hope.
Pretty close. Pretty close to 6 feet.
As I was getting dressed this morning, I thought, oh, I should wear something. I'm going out of the house. Something different, something professional. I don't think I got there. I'm just one step out of my pajamas.
I'm just happy if I'm wearing something.
So. Oh, totally. We all are, Pete.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm curious, Daniel, what we're going to take from this time and put it, infuse it into meetings that we have. So let's talk on a professional level here. We've been doing these Zoom meetings.
Sure.
We've talked about the upsides, the downsides. Now we're going to go back into our organizations. And how can we take the positive and make meetings? Because we know that in our professional lives, in our organizations, many, many times meetings are run inefficiently. They take way too long. We talk in circles. We leave wondering if we even accomplished anything.
Oh boy, so true. Yeah, the average a person speaks about 16,000 words a day. Maybe has 27 conversations a day. Potentially 5 to 12 hours of weekly meetings. And when easily half of them are seen as wasteful, like that's billions, capital B billions wasted. Also, like, I mean, this is not your question, but there's a study I was reading recently about how the average number of people someone feels like they can tell something important to is just over 2. And in the 80s, when they did this study the first time, it was like just under 3. So it's like all of America like lost a friend over the last 20 years. So right. And so you think about like, how do we make sure that we're having conversations like that matter, right? And that have an impact. My thesis is design is just another synonym for intentionality. And so, yeah, there's a conversation operating system in the book. Sorry for the siren. I'm in New York City. It's okay. There's like 9 P's I sometimes have people think through. You could think through like the people, right? The place it's happening, the pre versus the post experience. Right? Like, what's the process that you're going to use? Like, I mean, look, there's a million frameworks, but at the very least, just sit down and think about, like, how do I want to start and how do I want to end? And how do I communicate that to people so that when we, quote unquote, get off track, we can get back on track? Like, getting people bought into the arc of the conversation is, I think, the only hope we have to guide things forward. And an agenda is like table stakes. Like at the very least, it is somebody's job to design the conversation and say, here's what we're going to talk about and why. But it's so much harder not just to have an agenda be like a laundry list of things to talk about, right? We're going to talk about, you know, bananas, carrots, eggs, lemons, and yogurt, right? Okay, wait a minute. What are we going to actually do with that? Oh, we're going to make a banana cream pie. It's going to be delicious. Like, oh, okay, I want to come to that meeting.
Yeah.
Right? That's having purpose underneath the whole thing, right? Not just a laundry list of items. And so if there's anything we can take from all this is that, yes, it kind of sucks. It's a drag to have to be intentional about all our interactions, to have to schedule them and have to plan them. But the option, the alternative is, wandering aimlessly through this project that is life. So I think designing our conversations, as my mother likes to say, Daniel, I don't always want to design all of my conversations. And I'm like, Mom, that is a design decision too. And she's like, God, you're right, it is. And so it's totally fine to go back to, like, I think one of your super earlier questions, like, it's totally fine to design a conversation for surprise, to design it for delight or the unexpected, if that's your choice, right? But you have to also keep in mind, will other people be excited to participate in that conversation if you tell them what it's about? You're like, hey, so I'm going to invite you to a 2-hour, completely unplanned, improvisational meeting. And people are like, yes, I'm super into this. Versus like, wow, I really thought there would be slides and I would get a handout. Right? And so like, it's just about mismatched expectations.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And having clear expectations, communicating those expectations, and being open to hearing the expectations and opinions of others. Like, in one way, when I'm sort of like, wow, do I have to talk about this stuff? Like, these things are also like, it's like Legos. It's so simple, but we're just so rushed. And anything we can do to get people to slow down a little bit and to be a little bit more intentional about how they design these critical conversations, like, it will make the world a better place. Like, that's the stakes.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, our guest is Daniel Stillman. He's a corporate facilitator and a keynote speaker, podcaster, and he's written Good Talk, How to Design Conversations That Matter. So in the last 7 weeks or so, we have had at my house dinner prepared by us. There are 5 of us in my house right now, which is wonderful. I've got my son home from college, of course, and his girlfriend. And then there are 3 of us at the house anyway. So every night is a fully prepared meal. We sit down. We spend a lot of time. We have so much more time to have these conversations. And So we do. We design conversations, and sometimes it feels contrived, but always it's a really great, like, you talk about the arc of the conversation, and it's a great starting place. And we end up never bringing it back around to a conclusion. It just kind of goes off in tangents, but we figured that that's okay, too.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Talk about these longer periods of time that we are sitting with people, hopefully, if we're not living alone, which is, you know, too bad. When we do, then we can just talk to ourselves, I guess.
We can. Well, that's a really, maybe I'm like, let's just say that's the most important conversation that underpins it all. We have a lot of self-talk, not all of it good.
Right, I know. Well,
that's just me. Oh, okay. I'm glad it's not just me.
Yeah. I mean, that's generally the underlying issue right now, is because you can talk yourself into a tizzy, right? If you start worrying. But those conversations help us. What are your couple tips for those great conversations around the dinner table?
Well, I think there's a missed opportunity on closing the loop on all those arcs. I think, the thread of a conversation is a thing, right? Threading is one of the really important components of a conversation. You can think about it as the arc. And you know when you've lost the thread of the conversation or it's disjointed. But there's this classic quote of like, if there's a gun on the stage in Act One, it's got to go off by, you know, the finale. And I think it's always great to like pick up the thread and circle back. And that just shows people that you care and that you pay that you're paying attention. And so following up with people on something that they mentioned earlier and circling back around and tying a bow on those things. When I do it with my coaching clients, it's like, it's not just like every week's different. It's like we say, oh, well, how did you do with that thing? Like, where did you go with that? It's really, really important. I also think like asking better questions is a better invitation to better dialogue. And I'll give you like a really specific example. In corporate facilitation, we teach this tool called Rose Thorn Bud, which is about breaking things down by positive, negative, and potential. But it's actually a tool from the Boy Scouts of America. And I learned it originally from a literally overgrown Boy Scout who used it to facilitate a better dialogue with his 3 daughters at the dinner table. And I'm sure you know the experience of how is your day? And there's several options that can come, which is like, fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, what did you learn at school today? Nothing. Like, how are you doing? Good. Right? That question puts all of the work on the other person. It's a really lazy question. how was your day? Fine.
That's a good point.
So it'll be fine, which is a non-answer, or you'll get like, here's all the terrible things that happened today. I think those are that's usually the two options, like kind of nothing or like all the bad stuff. And so when you say, hey, everybody at the table, I'd like us all to share in order one rose, something great that happened to us today. And now I'd like everyone to share one thorn, something not great that happened today. And then one bud, one thing that you're optimistic or hopeful or looking forward to, something that has potential. Like, yeah, it's goofy, but I do this with my fiance when we're on vacation. Right? We do like these end of day stand-ups where it's like, hey, what did we like today? What didn't we like? Sometimes we'll put it in a book so we can actually remember what happened every day of our vacation. The idea of having intentional questions at the dinner table, I'm not saying you have to like buy a big stack of question cards. Like that's a little formal. But I think just asking a more generous question, Krista Tippett, who I'm a huge fan of her show on Being, she talks about how it's hard to resist a generous question and that questions receive responses in their likeness. And so a lazy question gets a lazy answer.
I love that.
An intentional question gets an intentional answer.
The book is Good Talk, How to Design Conversations That Matter. Our guest is Daniel Stillman. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. This is my favorite topic to talk about.
All right. Great. Take care. Bye-bye. Right.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Let's face it. If we want to stay informed on COVID-19, but our constant media exposure can be downright stressful, this is an emotion we are trying to control and mitigate at this point. Also, how do we judge which media we should listen to? Joining us is Dr. Tracy Thomas, who is a psychologist and emotional scientist based in California. She joins us now to talk about the kind of media we should consume and what is better to skip and how to handle the emotions surrounding this historical and unprecedented time in our lives. Welcome, Dr. Thomas.
Hi, it's great to be here. I'm really looking forward to giving people some great strategies today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I have to admit, I am in this group. My wife has yelled at me almost on a daily basis for trying to get an update, and I tell her it's for work, but really it's just my own emotional and consumptive need.
Yeah.
Help me.
Okay, Pete, you are among many, many people who are in this struggle. So the thing to keep in mind is that anything, including our media consumption, is best done intentionally rather than reactively or passively. And so we can all do the same activity, but an activity can be done intentionally or reactively. And when you do when you watch media, if you do it in a way that is intentional, right? I'm here to get this information. I'm going to take this information and action it. And if you're in what we call a more emotionally activated state, that's very different than being a passive person in the process that's just sort of getting conditioned by the media rather than being able to put in a position of activation on what to do. So I'm really recommending for people that they are intentional with what they're doing and not take for granted the reality of what happens when we just passively take in negative information and just have that sort of end up really impacting our health and our mindset.
So I'm imagining that you're not talking about what I'm doing, which is casually perusing, using my iPhone, reclining down in my couch, and just finding any information that piques my interest. And sometimes right before bedtime, which creates these vivid and really exciting dreams, nightmares for my wife. When you say intentional, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is the thing, right, where we've all become conditioned through technology to just be in sort of this reactive process where when there's a lull in anything, and even in fact, just as a major impulse, humans are now just impulsively conditioned to look at their phone and look for info and just start to fill the space. And when we keep in mind that everything is conditioning us, it's conditioning our future, then and our mind is the main way that we create everything. Our mind gives us an impulse for action. And if we put too much in it that convolutes things and makes it complicated rather than makes it activated for action, then we end up creating an unintentional outcome in our health and in our life, in our relationships. So it's definitely important to be self-monitoring for all of what a person is doing, and whether it's an intention or whether it's just a reaction. But when it comes to this unprecedented time and everybody's home and watching the media, listening to the media, looking at their phones, just shifting into an intentional state that says, what do I want to know? And if I get that information, what am I going to do with it? Makes a complete difference. And so even if you end up just happen to be on your phone and you end up in that pattern, once you get some information, it's really important to just activate yourself on what you're going to do with it. Because if it just sits in the holding tank, it can create really serious health outcomes for people.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Tracy Thomas, a psychologist and an emotional scientist. And I have to ask you, Tracy, what is that? What is an emotional scientist? I can kind of guess, but I've never really heard that specific term.
So for my entire career, and even all the way back through my childhood, I was somebody that was very capable. I'm a very highly emotionally sensitive person, and I'm able to see and really understand the matrix of emotions that are going on in human beings. Things that they have no idea are going on in them and happening with them, and how that all, you know, those emotions impact their behaviors and create either negative outcomes that they didn't intend or productive outcomes that they did intend. And studying people's emotional process, specifically, Lynn, studying the difference between whether they're in a reaction or whether they're in an intention, really allows me to help people just make simple shifts by just, say, asking themselves that question all day, every day. And what I've done as an emotional scientist is really simplify a process, because people need things to be simple, an emotional framework that says, am I in an intention? Am I in a reaction? And if I'm in a reaction, my job is to shift to an intention. And people are able to then become what I would consider to be in like an elevated emotional state all the time, where they're able then, when something is occurring, instead of reacting in stress, they're able to just have a new involuntary response that just says, what is the action? What is my outcome? And as an emotional scientist, I'm able to change people's emotional constitution. So it's really, really fun and really productive for people.
I just really love what you say about intentionality versus reactivity. And it seems like if we wake up each day and we say that to ourselves, I'm going to be intentional about the media I consume, and we go from there, that is a good place to start. And I'm wondering, for you being an emotionally sensitive person, and I worry about this with people who, you know, read others' stories of grief and loss and tragedy during this time. And I worry so much that they internalize it in such a big way that if you are an emotionally sensitive person, you know, might you not be better off just going to, for example, the CVC or the CDC or the Utah Department of Health in our case, or the Summit County Department of Health website in our case, and sort of avoid all the rest of it?
Lynn, this is a great point, because as the world's expert on emotionally sensitive people, and those are the people that we work with in our emotional training program, emotionally sensitive people already, pre corona crisis, they are already people who are absorbing more emotions around them than other people do. They're very, very sensitive. It's an actually it's a gift, excuse me, but it comes with a great responsibility of what you're going to take in, because again, otherwise you kind of get burdened with it. And so as a very highly trained, emotionally sensitive person, where I live an intentional experience basically every moment of every day, in this crisis, I'm definitely managing all of my intake. And when I get the information, I'll say, okay, great, this is what it is. This is what I'm going to do with it. This is how I'm going to act in my life to create outcomes. That's really important, because if I watch an extra 5 minutes of something just because I'm sort of lulled into doing that, or if I read something I really didn't intend to read, I can notice an immediate change in my emotional state. And when we have a lowered emotional state, then our cognitive capacity doesn't work. And right now, we need everyone, and especially emotionally sensitive people, to manage the emotional input so that they can be at their top emotional and cognitive capacity right now. So I absolutely agree with that, Lynn.
That's great. Just one tip I heard the other day that you're making me think of is someone who is emotionally sensitive decided to just start focusing on the numbers. And sometimes these numbers are hard to get. Numbers of people who have recovered. Numbers of people who've come out of the hospital recovered. And instead of focusing on numbers of deaths. And I thought, wow, that's brilliant, even though it's so simple.
Well, and Lynn, this is the kind of emotional training that we do at our emotional training company, because and all day, every day, pre-crisis, people are either, well, most, unfortunately, most humans are conditioned for lack and to focus on what's not working, what's not there, what people aren't doing. And that's just standard human conditioning, which is why there's so much suffering, depression, and anxiety, and people not really living their potential. So especially in a crisis, this is what we're doing at our company and with our clients. Our focus is entirely on all the amazing people that are activated, all the love that is there, all the strategies that are being put in place, how intelligent people are being. The more you put your attention there, as with anything, where you put your attention, everything grows. So I'm right with you there. I look for a moment, okay, this is how many people have died, and this is how much good stuff is happening, and what's my outcome that I'm going to do as a citizen in order to take care of myself, be a part of the solution, and focus on a future that I'm going to design every single day, every moment of every day, no matter what info I'm getting.
So this sounds similar to an emotional replacement therapy.
Yes, we consider ourselves doing emotional transplants here, meaning if somebody's emotional constitution is a reactive one, where everything they're doing, even things that look really responsible, can be reactions, not just of the moment, but from past experiences. And so if you can shift yourself from a reactive status and in a reactive existence, which you're sort of in a condition of that, every time you make a shift from a reaction to an intention, and even if it's like, I'm making a great meal for my family tonight, and everything is outcome-oriented, you actually recondition your emotional system so that your auto-response to things, just like mine is, when I see, you know, negative things happening, my auto-response is, all right, what outcome do I want to produce in my life right now? And then that impulse puts my actions toward that. And it really is like having a new emotional foundation. And so you're really picking up on what we do here, Pete.
It's just some work my wife is doing for me. she's doing a brain transplant.
Good. This is excellent. This is what we want.
Well, and
imagine if everybody was in an intentional state with all things they do versus a reactive one, we'd all be enjoying a lot more happiness together. Even in this time, we'd be doing a lot of things more strategically together.
Mm. We do it with food. We do it with, you know, here in a mountain town, we do it with our training.
But we don't, at least until recently, we don't do it so much with our own emotional state. And I certainly can appreciate that. How do I wean into it? You know, what are some of the ways that I can socially experiment with my own cognitive replacement, or emotional replacement?
Okay, good. Yeah. So, Pete, when we recognize that our entire life is driven by our emotional state, right? Everything that we have, everything that we're processing in either an intentional or reactive way creates physical form, right? All the skyscrapers were created by somebody's intentions. Everything that we have that has been created, negative or positive, is created by our emotional state and how we manage it, how we harness it. So first of all, I'm going to just invite everybody to make a commitment that you're going to be in charge and you're going to be the person responsible for managing your emotional state and keeping it in an elevated place. And elevated just means that it's intentional and capable of doing all the things that we need to do at this time. So that commitment comes with the willingness to self-monitor. So it's like keeping track of yourself, like you're in charge of Pete and keeping an eye on what he's doing and keeping track of him so that you say, no, Pete, we're doing this intentionally. Nope, you're going to go over here instead of over here. And when you start to monitor yourself this way, it doesn't have to be so serious. It can be actually very fun and amusing. And then you just make this commitment to ask yourself the question, am I in a reaction or am I in an intention? And if I'm in a reaction, I'm going to ask myself, what's my intention? And that simple process of making that commitment to yourself, self-monitoring, checking if you're in a reaction or an intention, and very simply, if you're in a reaction, just make an emotional shift. Say, what's my intention? Something will come up. As soon as you ask that question, an answer will come from within you. And then just act in the direction of those outcomes that you're intending. And that's the simplest process. This is what I call the method. And people can also read that in my book, which is called The Method, The Practical Path to Living Your Purpose and Potential. Because as you guys can see, this is a very practical process that can change things on a massive level.
Dr. Tracy Thomas. Okay, your website, Dr. Tracy Inc., as in incorporated, just all one word, dots.com, Dr. Tracy Inc. If you visit the website, there is a test you can take to find out how emotionally sensitive you are. And I just sort of clicked through it and I'm only on page 3 because I've been doing it as we've been chatting, which I know is another reactive thing, not an intentional thing. But nonetheless, here we are. And it's really great because I wonder if this is something that we think about very often. I mean, as Pete was saying, a lot of the solutions that we have in our little mountain resort town and the outlying areas is, well, just go outside and exercise and you'll be fine. And, you know, really thinking about intentionally controlling and that amount of sensitivity. First, we have to know whether or not we are emotionally sensitive. And I just feel like maybe a lot of us aren't in touch with that.
Well, it's a great point, Lynn, in that so many people don't realize that, and they tend to think a lot of negative things about themselves and apply, negative assessments of themselves. And, you know, being sensitive in our society has often been thought of as this really negative thing, like you're not strong. But being sensitive means that you have very sensitive instrumentation that is picking up on lots of things, like when people are little. Emotionally sensitive people feel this from the time they're little. They're feeling extreme. They're feeling everything much more intensely than others. And then their thought that, you know, that this is some bad thing and it turns into all these mental health issues. But when you take your emotional sensitivity and you utilize it and you do this simple process of being clear about whether you're in an intention or a reaction and shifting into an intention all the time, all of this emotional ability can actually be directed in the service of amazing things, because these are the most compassionate people. These are people that really care. But if they're overwhelmed by their own emotions, then emotionally sensitive people end up spending a life struggling rather than helping other people in the way that they dearly, you know, want to do that. So finding out about your emotional sensitivity on our emotional sensitivity assessment is key. Just asking that question to yourself over and over throughout the day. Because Lynn, to your point, if people go out and exercise, they're going to feel a little bit better temporarily. And so that makes sense. But we're talking about a methodology that all day, every day, can allow you to keep an elevated state and feel good from, you know, be free from the reactive process, which just creates a ton of stress, and a lot of chronic health issues are because people are in chronic reactivity rather than consistent intentionality.
Wow, it's been so great talking to you. And we have just a minute left, but I wanted to make a point. Yesterday, I was watching the Utah governor's press conference on Facebook Live, and I didn't have it in the full screen, so I could see all these comments coming up and questions, and they were very mean-spirited and ridiculous and unnecessary. And yet, I found myself like reading each one that came up, and then I thought, well, I'm not even listening to him. And so then I finally expanded my screen. I went, oh, aha, I can just click out of those mean comments. And I'm just wondering if that's something that you recommend to people overall. Just don't read the comments. The kids, it's going down
Lynn,
a rabbit
absolutely.
Hole.
Absolutely. Because more simply even is decide your intentions. Because even if people are sort of casually, thinking of what Pete said, it's like, if what you're doing is casual and we don't recognize that we're all in a physics equation, our entire life is physics, and our everything that we do sets in motion outcomes. That's the way that physics works. So if we do something casually, we're still in cause and effect. And so there's really nothing casual about anything that we're doing. And yet it doesn't have to be super overwhelming to just decide to be intentional, because it's very tempting and to go read these other things because we see a stimulus and then we just go to it. And with all the stimulus, everybody just, even more importantly, can just focus on what they're intending.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Dr. Tracy Thomas, it's drtracyinc.com. And what was the name of your book again?
The book is called The Method, The Practical Path to Living Your Purpose and Potential. And it's all about this process that I'm teaching you guys today to create a whole different emotional constitution for people.
Oh, wonderful. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Great being with you.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thanks to both our guests today on The Mountain Life, Daniel Stillman, and also Dr. Tracy Thomas. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life on KPCW Park City. Just a few minutes left before we go to NPR News. Wanted to talk briefly about masks today. It's become a new way of life for all of us, and there is increasing encouragement that just stops short of a mandate on wearing masks every time we go out to protect others. So we hope when we do go out that we see others wearing masks to also protect us. As our restrictions ease on what we do and where we go and the size of groups that we gather in, we really want to see everyone wearing a mask. So we know that there are all kinds of different masks out there. The other day I put one on and it was a little short. It bent my ears out in such a funny way that I thought, really, I know a mask isn't stylish, but I cannot wear this one. So what we do know is that masks reduce the spread of infectious disease by catching microbes expelled by the person wearing it and protect the wearer from microbes in their environment. So when we cough, sneeze, talk, or simply breathe, we emit a plume of air and droplets, which are composed, as we know, of saliva, mucus, salts, and if we're infected,
potentially dangerous microbes. So whether you wear a surgical mask, which is, I am finding, the most comfortable one, with a little bit looser straps that go about your ear, or an N95, which is, as we also know, the safest sort of mask to wear, or if we have a stylish cloth mask. A friend of mine came by the other day with her mask, saying that she had a party on one side and serious on the other side, which I thought was really fun. But please, everyone, let's keep each other safe. Let's protect each other and wear your mask. Thanks for tuning in today to The Mountain Life.